Hey, it's a local spotlight show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host today. And with me today, Keith Short, a trial attorney. Welcome, Keith.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yes. Now, Keith, I understand that you operate in Alton right now.
I do.
But you grew up in Brighton.
Well, no. Actually, I kind of misled you by accident.
I
grew up actually south of here. I went to high school in a town called Anna.
But you lived in Brighton.
I live in Brighton right now.
Oh, right. Yeah, you live in Brighton.
I live outside of the town in a off of a small lake. And my wife and I had lived in Edwardsville for years. And I went to high school in a very small town, smaller than Jerseyville. And Jerseyville would have been a big city for where I went,
really?
where I grew up. Yeah, where I went to high school. And I just enjoy the smaller areas, the slower areas. And when we were in Edwardsville, it was getting larger and larger. And I wasn't actually an alderman in city council. And it's great. It's a nice town. I really loved it. But it just got a little too much traffic.
You know,
too much.
Some folks, you know, that I know, you know, their goal is for Jerseyville to be like Edwardsville. But I don't, you know, I like Jerseyville just the way it is.
Yeah, I do too. You know what's interesting is when I was on the city council, they were trying to bring gambling into the, you know, these little gambling things, and I was against it. Nothing per se against gambling, just the way it was set up, I didn't think was beneficial to the town. I didn't think it was beneficial to the college students. I didn't think it was a good idea. So I was the one who helped kind of ban it in Edwardsville originally. And this lady said to me, who desperately wanted Edwardsville to have gambling, she said, "Mr. Short, Edwardsville isn't this perfect little town everyone thinks it is." And I said, "Ma'am, as long as everyone thinks it is, it is. And it's my job to keep it that way." But I left there not because I don't think it's becoming a bad place. It's just a different place than I'm comfortable with. I like a town like Jerseyville. I like Brighton. I'd rather be in Jerseyville, but my wife wanted some land. And this was on a lake, so there we are.
Didn't you grow up like in near a park?
No, and yeah, our property, when I was born near Chicago, and then when I was in high school, my dad got into a different field of work, and we moved to Anna, actually to Jonesboro, which is south of Carbondale. From my backyard, our backyard abutted the Shawnee National Forest, and I could get on a dirt bike. This was in the 80s. And
how old were you?
15, 16 years old.
Okay.
And I could get on a dirt bike and I could ride for 20 or 30 miles and never see another living soul. It was just forest preserve. And one time I ran out of gas near East Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Yeah. And that was long before cell phones happened. And boy, I got it bad when I got home.
Now, you were also a Marine.
Well, I went to Officer Candidate School, yeah, for the Marine Corps. I was married at the time. I wish I'd stayed, longer. I ended up in a situation where I had some marital difficulties. I had kids, and it was going to be pretty clear to me that if I wanted to keep my kids and keep them with me all the time, I couldn't stay in the Marine Corps. And so I was allowed to leave. I've regretted it ever since, but you know, it's just one of those paths you take in life. You know,
yeah.
Went through it all at Quantico, and really proud of it. A friend of mine, actually, is a 2-star general, but he was in the Army and went to high school together. And I looked him up the other day, and I went, "Wow, you know, he ended up being a 2-star general. I wonder if I'd stayed, where I would have ended up." But you know, you can't think that way because I would have never probably met my wife. Wouldn't have the kids that I have today because that was, you know, I'm 60 and that was 40 years ago. So.
Yes. Now, you're a trial attorney.
I am.
And in our discussion one time, you told me about the fact that not many attorneys actually ever go to trial. I mean, if they go, just a few times.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. If you went and got on Google and looked it up, you would find out that there are different statistics. There was a Georgetown Law Review article talking about trial lawyers, and it was something like 92% of all trial lawyers have never done 5 jury trials, 92%, 9 out of 10. And that article was written 20-something years ago. I think I mentioned to you this one time. I did 5 in 1 year. I did 2 here in 1 year, 2 years ago in Jerseyville, and we won both those trials. But I probably could count on one hand the number of lawyers who've done 20 trials. And there's probably 400 to 500 lawyers in, say, Madison County. And that means on one hand, I can count the number of people who have done, I'm talking jury trials. I'm not talking, you know, like workers' compensation trial. Because if you counted those, I've done 200.
Right.
Family law doesn't have juries, so you don't really count those. I mean, they're very complicated trials, family law is. But there's no jury involved. So what I do, where you pick 12 people like you see on TV, if you watch The Lincoln Lawyer, things like that, what I do, there's as many as I've done, it's less than 1%.
How long have you been practicing law?
33 years.
Okay. Yeah. And how many trials have you been involved in?
Well, at jury trials, probably 30. If you counted all other trials, it's 250. If you counted workers' compensation trials and all these other, which, by the way, are extremely important. And in many ways, the workers' compensation cases for me are personally more valuable than, say, a $500,000 personal injury lawsuit. Because with the workers' compensation folks, when those guys are hurt or those ladies are hurt, you know, what result is they're injured, they're racking up bills, they're not working, they don't have an income, and life is incredibly scary mm-hmm. for many of them. And, you know, I had a lady in my office yesterday, and I looked at her and I said, you know what, you're going to be fine. And you could tell she was just nervous.
Yes.
You're going to be fine. I said, there's literally virtually nothing that could happen to you in this system that I haven't seen or faced, all the way up as high as you can go. My partner, Holly, does a lot of those trials with us, and I think she's won, I think at last count, it was 28 of her last 30 trials. Same. So we tell people that. But the jury trials are the ones that are fascinating that you see on TV.
Why is that? Why do you think, I mean, of course, it's expensive to go to a jury trial.
It is.
But everybody wants to settle out of court. Is that it?
Well, no, the system isn't designed really any longer for jury trials to become as critical. First off, there are lots of arbitrations that occur. There's lots of mediations. Mediation wasn't really a thing when I was a young lawyer. And I went through Harvard's mediation training program and Northwestern's to be better at mediations.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's a fascinating thing, but you do it all online, but it's classes online, but it's through Harvard.
Sure.
And I found out that I really don't enjoy mediation at all. But the thing is, mediation is kind of like a divorce. It's nobody's really happy, but it's over. Because what happens is you'll come into a room as a defendant and I'll come in as a plaintiff, and you're going to end up paying more money than you want. I'll get less money than I want. But in the end, it's over for everybody. And there's some resolution. You get to move forward with your life. I told one of my attorneys with me yesterday, I said, you know, our job is not, and this is a great myth. It just really irritates me. You see these folks on TV, and they say so many things that aren't true.
Myths about the law.
Oh, yeah. But the great myth is this. Oh, we're going to get you every cent you deserve. That's nonsense. First off, the only way that ever happens is if you go to trial. Everything in life is a compromise. I told them, if we can get them 90% of everything they deserve without having to subject them to a trial, without having to spend that additional money, without having to add that additional risk and the emotional trauma, if you can get them to within 90% without having to do that, that's great. You've done your job. You've gotten their lives back to where they should be. You've taken care of them. But if you have to go to trial, there's only two reasons to go to trial. One is they aren't going to give your client what you think they deserve, or which has to mean they're nowhere close to 90%. Or sometimes they're just obstinate and they just won't do it. I tried the same case here in Jerseyville 3 times because the defendant would not admit he was responsible. Mm. And we ended up with the first trial was a mistrial because two of the jurors got in a fist fight.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Allison, no, it wasn't Allison Lorton. A prior Eric. Judge, Eric Pistorius was a judge. Eric's a great guy. We've become friends. we're in the courtroom. You can, what is that? You can hear him yelling down there. It was funny.
Oh, man.
And then so that ended up being a mistrial. The second trial, Allison was our judge. Allison Lorton was our judge. I shouldn't be so familiar, but you know, in the law, once we get to know each other, we all know each other.
Right.
You know, we'll call each to her face, and in public, I would always say Your Honor. But you know, I knew her before she was Your Honor. So, anyway, Judge Lorton, she did a wonderful job in that case, and I'm just hammering away at my defendant trial. Sweat's running down his face, and one of the jurors is so wound up she has a seizure. Oh, and the witness left the stand to go into the which is the right thing to do because he was a doctor, left the stand and go help her. Well, that's a mistrial. You can't do that. So we had to try it a third time, and the third time we won. So,
hey, if you're just joining us, I have Keith Short with me, a trial attorney, operates out of Madison County, but operates a lot of, does a lot of work here in Jersey County and Greene County at all. You ever doing?
Yeah. I've actually tried cases in Morgan County. I have a massive, massive trial that's going to be going to trial in Taylorville, which is Christian County. I've tried them in Macoupin. I've tried them all over the place. I tried them near Chicago, but I've done a lot here in Jersey.
Okay. I guess, what's it like? All right. Just personally, what's it like being in law and being a trial jury for you?
You know, it's terrifying at times, and anyone who says otherwise is lying to you. I have won cases that I didn't think I was going to win. I lost them that I thought I was going to win. The scariest thing, and I've been through some scary stuff in my life, the scariest time is when the bailiff finds you after you've done the whole trial, you're waiting for the jurors to come back, and you're laughing with your client, and we're talking about how do you think it went, and the other side's doing the same thing, and then the bailiff comes and says the jury's back, and the sweat just starts on your hand. It just does. And I've done this, you know, it's maybe pretty successful, and it's still, because if you're not sweating, you don't care. Uh-huh. And you do care. And in the end, for me, it's, you know, I'd rather win than anything. Yeah. The amount is whatever the amount is. I just want to win. What happens is the judge says, have you picked a four person? And the four person gives the judge a form and the judge reads it. And if the judge says it's verdict form A, that means I've won. If he says it's verdict form B,
you lost.
So as soon as you hear the letter A, and you know what? I don't care what it's worth.
You know, being a trial attorney like yourself, right? It's different than a lot of other jobs, right? Sure. Because if you lose, right, you get paid?
No, it's intellectual gambling. I'm gambling on my firm's talents and skills. What's really, we don't get paid. It's kind of like golf. We don't win. But unlike golf, where you can get third, fourth, fifth place prize money is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's zero. It's all or it's
nothing.
I mean,
you could do this, all this work. How long can you spend, or how long have you spent on a trial, working with a client? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of time, a lot of money, and then you lose.
Oh, yeah. Someday we're going to we're going to talk about this famous case in Madison County that I tried.
Famous case?
Everybody at my age knows about it because I worked on this case
We're not going to talk about it today, but which case are we talking about?
Well, I'm not going to say the name. But I will just tell you, we worked on it for 6 years. And at the end, there was millions of dollars on the table, and it did not work out well for us. But for interesting—
6 years?
Yeah, for interesting reasons. You know, there was a case just recently won in Madison County where this gentleman was poisoned by a company, and the poison was something they knew could— harm people and didn't tell him. They worked on that trial for 8 years. Now it was $241 million when they were finished, but it was 8 years. Yeah, that's not, the typical case for me is 2 to 3 years. You come in the door and say, hey, Keith, I'd like you to represent me in this big injury case. First thing I'd tell you is, we're going to be friends for a long time.
Yeah.
We're going to get to know everything about each other.
Now, when you start that, you start this process.
Yeah.
Does the other side sometimes come at you and go, hey, let's just settle?
Yeah, that's sort of a myth. It's happened one time.
Really?
Yeah. It almost never happens in what I do, because what I do is really serious. Some of the stuff is really serious. We have different departments. I'm going to give you a real quick example. I had a case where this hospital, it's ongoing right now. This is what I can tell you. This sweet 80-year-old woman goes in for surgery. Before the surgery on her shoulder, they're going to give her an injection in the shoulder. And the injection is so that after the shoulder surgery, it'll be not quite as painful for her. Mm-hmm. Anytime you give anyone sort of injection, you have to have them hooked to monitors because the anesthesia that we know can migrate over to the phrenic nerve, and that phrenic nerve controls the heart, and it shuts the heart off. Well, that's what happened to her. But nobody had her hooked to a heart monitor, and she died right in front of them, and they didn't even know she was dead.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and the doctor... So anyway, the hospital calls me before I even file suit. They know I represent the lady. And they offer me a six-figure amount. And I said, thank you. It's appreciated, but no, thank you. Well, now the demand that went out yesterday was $14.5 million because now I can prove one of the two, either the hot doctor or the nurses are lying. I can prove one of them's lying. So I get to stand in front of the jury and say, look, we're here because somebody simply will not accept responsibility for what they did. And they've made me go through 2 years of litigation, and they're making you sit in this chair because they won't tell the truth. And it is, that's what's going to happen, because the doctor in this case has said the machine was working fine and the nurse unhooked him from it. I never told him to do that. The two nurses say, we told the doctor the machine wasn't working at all, but he wanted to go forward with it anyway.
Oh boy, yeah.
So I have them diametrically saying the other side's lying. And I get to look at them and say, you get to decide who it is. It doesn't matter to me. You know, you decide who's telling the truth. And that's fun. That's exciting stuff. And you'd think they would just compromise. Somebody would sit down and say, look, we just have to make this go away because one of us is going to get slaughtered.
One thing that we were talking about that I wanted you to expand on this show a little bit was emotional control.
Yeah.
How, I mean, you have to have emotional control.
Yeah.
I'm supposing you never lost your emotional control. Why?
Oh, what? Oh, I have twice been escorted out of court.
Oh,
oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have lost it.
Oh, I have lost it. I lost it in Jackson County, Illinois one time, and I was actually outside the courtroom, and a judge and I, we had words with one another. And I'm thinking, look, you know what? Just because you have that black robe on, I respect the fact that you have been given that and you've earned it and all those other things. It doesn't give you a right to demean people. It doesn't give you a right to be a bully to people.
You said this in court?
No, this was outside the courtroom. Okay. This was, he wasn't even wearing his robe. Okay. What happens was I was walking up the stairs at the Jackson County Courthouse. There's a sign that says phones are prohibited except for attorneys. So I'm in the stairwell, but it's one of those open stairwells, kind of like here in Jerseyville, where you can see people going up and down the stairs. And I'm looking at my phone to see what courtroom I need to go to. And this gentleman who's not wearing a robe, who I don't recognize, starts yelling at me, not screaming, you can't have your phone. I'm like, I walk over, I said, well, the sign said, first off, I said, I'm sorry, who are you? I'm Chief Judge, and he says his name. I said, okay, Chief Judge. The sign says the lawyer's going to have their phones. Well, you can't use them. I said, who in the world would have a sign? And I said that.
Yeah.
Who would have a sign that says lawyers can have their phone but not use them? And then he asked my name. I told him my name. And then we kind of got into it a little bit, and there's a sheriff's deputy standing there. And he says, I think you need to leave. And he says, you need to go to your courtroom. And this gentleman's going to escort you. I said, well, there's a problem. I don't know which room to go to. And the officer showed me my way to the room. That was one time. And one time in St. Louis, this judge was incredibly disrespectful. And another lawyer grabbed me by the arm and said, we need to leave. Yeah.
But controlling your emotions, like we all, you know, I mean, we all have times in our lives when it's really, afterwards you go, oh, I wish I had just controlled myself.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
Yeah, it is difficult to do. It's, you know, what's interesting to do, you'll learn if you try cases, is the very most important thing you can ever say to a jury, you say this slowly. And you look at each one of them, because now they're waiting on each word. So it's not a matter of, and you have to have that pitch. It's acting. You have to have the pitch and go up and down. And it's okay to have emotions, but if it's too much, it's like too much sugar. It's not good for you. It's not good for your case.
I got you.
You use it sparingly. And also, you know, if you do that sometimes, you're clearly trying to pander and get the jurors to feel sorry for your client. And that's not right. That's not the point of the law.
Now, I ask you this. Back when you were in high school or college, were you into theater at all?
No, not one bit.
Really?
No. I was an athlete in high school. That was my focus. I wasn't even a very good student. I had no intent. My dad's the smartest. My daughter's brilliant. I got really lucky. My daughter's a valedictorian, University of Chicago student. She did Harvard at summer schools, and then she's a doctor now. She's an MD. My dad's smarter than all of us, and he didn't go to high school.
Wow.
Oh, much smarter than all of us. Yeah. If my dad had my education, he could have done anything. He made himself shockingly wealthy in two different things. This is a guy who married my mom when he was 17 and she was 14 in Eastern Kentucky. And
what do you do for a living?
Well, he didn't want to be a coal miner, so they moved to Chicago, and he learned how to fix cars, and he talked this guy into retiring early, and he said, I'll run the whole thing for you for 3 or 4 years if you'll give me a percentage ownership, and you can just go home and collect a check. And then that worked out fine, and with the percentage of ownership, he was able to borrow the money from a bank to buy that guy out. So he owned a gas station, and then he owned another one, and another one, and he owned Shell stations. And in the 70s, my dad, this is a man with literally an eighth grade education. In the 70s, he saw McDonald's as the future. And now my family has, I think, 40-something McDonald's. I don't own a single one because when I was a young guy, I was such a difficult person. My dad said, you need to go do something else. But my son owns 5 or 6 now, or my sister owns 14 or 15, and they're all wonderful. They're smart folks, and they're great, but I'm the only one who has a college degree, and I'm the poorest person in my family.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, but literally, if my dad, my brothers are like, my brothers could do what I do. My brother Steve could do what I do, probably better than I do it. He's just, they're smart, intuitive people, every one of them.
Well, we're close to running out of time.
Sure.
Okay, but just a couple comments on what you do. Okay, you're saying you don't have to be smart to do what you do. What do you got to be?
Well, you know what? You have to have faith. You have to have faith in a lot of things. You have to have faith in the system. You have to have faith in your client. I tell the clients this. It's not that much is very complicated. We just think it's complicated. I tried a case here in Jerseyville, and the first thing I did when I opened the trial, literally my opening statement to the jury was, people think medicine's complicated. Your body is just a machine like a car. I worked in a gas station for years. I have a heart, we have kidneys, car has filters. Real quick, I'll tell you, I told the jurors, I said, this is about a doctor who injured this person's bowel. I said, George, when I was in a deposition, the defense lawyer said there was a transverse injury. And I was like, I have no idea what that meant. And I'm sitting there in the deposition smiling to myself, thinking, I have no idea what that means. And I looked it up and I smiled and said, oh, you mean you nicked the bowel. And I told the jurors, so I won't say there was a transverse colonic injury.
Right, because they don't understand that.
Yeah, it nicked a bowel. And that means they cut a little hole like you would to a tire, and instead of air leaking out, the fecal matter and all that spilled into her belly.
Yeah.
And I said, you'll never hear me use words like transverse colonic.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. And you could see them nodding with me. And then I took out a whiteboard, and I just drew them. It's not that complicated. I'm convinced we won that trial by the end of my opening statement because we had taught them everything. So it's not that complicated, and most people can figure it out.
Well, Keith, it's been very enjoyable having you in studio.
Thank you.
And we'll have you back again.
So I look forward to it.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.